This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
At 9:15 p.m. Eastern on Live Bet tonight. They'll reveal the new player props right as they hit the market. That's tonight, 9:15 Eastern. Get a live head start on all the great Super Bowl prop options with DraftKings and Visa.
Super Bowl matchup is set. The Eagles are now favored on the board here at Circus Sports. They're 2.5-point favorites. Other spots right around 2. And that was after, by the way, the Chiefs opening up as a 2.5-point favorite last night, so that point spread has swung in the Eagles' direction. And joining us now to discuss what happened yesterday and the big game, it's Ross Tucker, Westwood One NFL analyst, host of the Even Money podcast, and on Twitter at Ross Tucker NFL. Good morning, sir. How are you today?
Morning, guys. I'm awesome. Yeah, I'm fantastic. I wish the first game had been a little bit better yesterday that I was on the sideline for, but yeah, I'm excited about the Super Bowl matchup for sure. You guys know I live outside of Philadelphia, mm-hmm. So. A lot of excitement about the Kelce brothers going against each other. That's never happened before. And obviously, Andy Reid, for most people in Philadelphia, is still a very much a beloved figure. So, look, make no mistake about it. They want to beat him. But it's kind of cool that either the Eagles win or Andy Reid wins for some Philadelphia fans out there.
All right, so you were on sidelines yesterday on Westwood One. And, yeah, you're right. That game was a stink bomb yesterday. But I've said this on the show so far this morning, Ross. They could play that game 100 times. It's not going to go down like that probably another time out of the 100 because it was so – the variance was off the charts with what happened. But when could you tell, like, that was going to be it for Brock Purdy, that he could not throw the football?
Well, a couple of things need to be said here. Like, it's a shame that that happened.
Yep.
Because I'm on the Niners sideline most of the time because I try to get as much TV time as I can. So I go on the away team sideline when the guys run out of bounds. But in all sincerity, you know, McCaffrey was playing his, you know what off. And he had one of the best touchdown runs I've ever seen. That run was sick by McCaffrey. Deebo Samuel's over there like volunteering to return kicks and punts to try to get the Niners back in. I mean, those guys, Fred Warner, Bosa, they were doing everything they could, but like it was pretty clear early in the second half that this just wasn't going to happen for them. That said, you know, it was 7-0, and the Eagles had just gotten a strip
sack. All right, it is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Glad you could be with us. Good morning in a championship Monday, and here we go. Glendale, Arizona, it is going to be as the Eagles and the Kansas City Chiefs will be battling for the Super Bowl. A tale of two games. One, you could fall asleep on. The other, well, yeah, down to the wire, close calls, conspiracies, a future in the AFC that I don't know if you'd want to be a part of if you're a team without a quarterback right now. It was a great Sunday. It didn't start off that way, but if you're looking for different storylines and you're looking for ways that stories develop and grow and whatnot, we got a few of them here. We do. First of all, let's get to the Eagles and the 49ers game, because this was over quick, because Brock Purdy was out, Josh Johnson came in, and was I looking at Josh Johnson as a guy that could lead the team to the lead the 49ers to victory in a way like, hey, when he gets going, he can throw and dice up the... No. I looked at Josh Johnson as a guy that's like, well, just hand the ball off to Christian McCaffrey. Just get the ball to your playmakers. But unfortunately, that's exactly what the Eagles knew was going to happen. They knew that their throwing passing game was going to be very short and done, and they were not going to be able to methodically get down the field. And that's exactly what the way this game played out. That's exactly how the Eagles defense had it. To me, one of the big stories in this game is the fact that Brock Purdy, who had an elbow injury and couldn't throw the ball 5 yards, when Josh Johnson left the game with a concussion, had to come back in the game. Because there's nothing else. There's no one else you have. There's nothing you can do. If we keep saying quarterback is the most important position in all of sports, if we keep saying that, there's got to be a way for teams to have that third guy available. Now, you may go, well, three is a lot. You never get to the third quarterback. Never. But in that case yesterday, you could have. And we've seen it happen in the past. We've seen guys that once played quarterback, and every team has that one guy that's sort of designated as the quote-unquote third QB. So they don't go into the game with the third quarterback, meaning I've got Joe, I've got Mike, and I've got Jim. Jim's a real quarterback, played in college, drafted to be a quarterback. He's in our quarterback's meetings. He's in our quarterback room. Not that guy. There's always the wide receiver that played quarterback or the long snapper. I don't know, long snapper is the wrong word, but somebody on the staff that once played quarterback that could be an emergency, I'm just going to hand the ball off guy. That is the thing that every team has. But that's not, Brock Purdy had to go into the game yesterday. And I think if you're the NFL, you have to look at that and say, hey, this is the, we got to figure out a way so that teams can have a real third option. Because, man, that game, I hate to admit this because, I've got a notebook and I'm taking down notes for the show and whatnot. I'm analyzing these games. But I was laying back on my couch watching it. And at one point, I think I fell asleep. Because I remember waking up kind of just snapping, not like a deep sleep, but just one of those where you rest your eyes for a bit.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, you've sort of disappeared for a bit and you wake up and you're like, I've lost a little bit of time, not a ton, but I've just lost a little bit of time. That's what that game was yesterday. That's the Eagles and the Niners. You knew it wasn't going to get competitive. The Eagles teed off and knew that the Niners were down to running the football. They managed only 164 yards of offense yesterday. That was it. And that's not going to be a game in which even when Jalen Hurts doesn't play well, and Jalen Hurts did not play well, even when that's the case, then you're going to lose, and you're going to lose big. And the Eagles got four rushing touchdowns because Hurts, in his ineffectiveness of being able to throw the ball, it was completely irrelevant. It did not matter whatsoever. So in a lot of cases that you see a game like that where it's just out of hand, it's either two things that has occurred. You can go to the what did one team do really well, superiorly well, but what did the other team fail to do? And in this case, we never, ever got to see in this game what Brock Purdy could do as the quarterback of the Niners. He was out early in this one. The Eagles got to him, got to that elbow. It was kind of a nerve. They pointed out it was a nerve pain. He barely, what was it? You can't feel your hands in that situation. So the Eagles were really set up to go to the Super Bowl. They did win. They go to the Super Bowl, et cetera. And then the sort of main event was Burrow versus Mahomes. And this is the fourth iteration of this game between these two quarterbacks. The last three Joe Burrow has taken by 3 points in each game. And now Patrick Mahomes has won this by 3 points. A back and forth game, good, bad on both sides. But I think the overall good was Patrick Mahomes and his play. We talked about it all week long on how big of a deal it was going to be for that high ankle sprain. Now, I was waiting for it because I told you guys all week long, listen to the way the sideline reporters or the people that are going to analyze this game are going to talk about the high ankle sprain. Tracy Wolfson, sideline reporter at CBS, just before the game, talked about all the treatment that he took, 4 to 5 hours a day on his ankle, all of those things. And I said, well, all right. Either two things are occurring here, right? One, he's superhuman. He's Wolverine. He's got something in his blood that allows him to play through this high ankle sprain. Or two, it's not as severe as maybe we initially thought. Because if he's able to really go out there, because she was talking about how, he got all this treatment and in practice he was walking and he was running and he was, okay, great. But let's not then look at future high ankle sprains to any athlete and say, well, Patrick Mahomes with this, he was able to do that. Patrick Mahomes was dealing with a high ankle sprain. It was pain tolerance. That's what he said. That was his gutsy a performance. So we're never going to know exactly to the level of how much pain he was feeling because we're not inside his body and he can tell us all he wants, but we're not going to know. But outside of a few hobbles, outside of a few things we were sort of watching, it was a masterful performance. And it was a guy that said, this is it. Am I going to regret in the offseason not going out there and putting everything I can out there if we're home. If in the next 2 weeks they're promoting the Cincinnati Bengals and the Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl 57, and I know that deep down I wasn't out there 100% as much as I could be for my teammates, I'm going to regret it. Now, look, I'm a long-term injury person. I don't like seeing guys do something where they get hurt, but I also understand the severity of the moment, right? Patrick Mahomes, he's in a game in which there's no tomorrow, just a longer offseason than the team that wins that game, right? As soon as they're done, one team's offseason begins, another one gets another 2 weeks. But that being said, what a performance. And what a performance by the Bengals to hang in a game in which they had things not so sharp on their side, and yet they managed to tie the game until that final drive. Now, we're going to get to the officiating because that was the big talking point coming out of this game. In fact, Josh Alper will join us next hour. We'll talk to him from Pro Football Talk. Man, the conspiracy theories, every time we get a big game, every single time there's a conspiracy that people want to dive into, they go at it full bore. You know, I'll say this before we head into the break. Imagine at your job, if every time you made a mistake or every time you weren't as effective or you were not incompetent, but you know what I mean, you made a mistake. People just don't say, oh, he made a mistake. They think you've done some Machiavellian mastermind 3D chess to help out your competition. Are we giving officials just way too much intelligence and way too much credit when we dive into conspiracy theories? Or maybe they're not as good as they used to be.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on Wake Up Call, a championship Monday. Are we excited about Super Bowl 57? Is this a matchup that thrills us and we can't wait for 2 weeks?
Well, here's my thinking, right?
All right.
After the Eagles won,
right?
Asterisk. sorry, Philly. You know it's true. I wanted the Chiefs to win because I thought there were better storylines between the Eagles and Chiefs versus
Andy
Eagles.
Reed.
Andy
Rick Reed against the other team, yeah.
Kelsey brothers. Going
Kelsey
head
brothers.
To head.
That's right. Yeah.
You know what are mom and dad supposed to do?
Right. I know. Wear the split jersey.
Yep.
You know, I tell this story a lot, and I wondered how it would be with parents. So I tell this story a lot. So I'm going to repeat it just because I think so. Years and years ago, you know, everybody who's listened to the show a while know I'm a big Steelers fan. And Steelers were playing the Broncos for the AFC Championship game. And I remember my boss, my general manager, my program director came to me just before the game. And they said, all right, look, the Broncos win. We're sending you to Detroit for the Super Bowl. We need you. We're going to put you on all six of our stations. like the whole thing. They're like, put the package together, like get with the NFL. Get the whole package together. So I got the media hotel and I had the flights and like I had it all down. So I submitted it and it was all good to go, proved everything. And all I had to do was just sit back and wait for the Broncos to win. And then that week I was flying to the Super Bowl. And so I'm a Steeler fan and I want the Steelers to go to the Super Bowl, but I also want to go to the Super Bowl. But I remember feeling like the moment I see something definitive in the game, my heart's going to tell me where I'm pulling, right? So the Steelers had the ball, and they were driving, and they had a big third down, and they converted it, and my brain, heart, emotion process was, oh, thank God. And I remember thinking, I'm pulling for my team. Like, I can't pull against my team. Like, I can't root against my team. As a parent, I would never want to be in a position where I've got two kids in the Super Bowl because I would be afraid of that, right? Like I don't want to admit that maybe one of them that I like better. I don't know. Like, as a parent, how do you do that? But if Kansas City scores a touchdown that has nothing to do with your kid, are you happy? Like, you'd want your son to score, but are you happy? If the Eagles do something amazing, do you say, okay, yeah, Jason benefits there, Travis benefits here? Can you really be a neutral observer, or are you sort of afraid in your own heart, like an emotion's going to come out I need to suppress? So, like, I'm sitting in the Broncos press box. I'm not openly cheering for the Steelers, but my brain was like, this is good, this is good, this is good. This, your team is going to the Super Bowl. So I don't know how Donna Kelsey and her husband are gonna react to this.
I don't either.
It's going to be wild. It's going to be wild.
I mean, either way, they're going to feel good about a son.
Yeah. But the Eagles are going to be playing a pretty banged-up Kansas City team, that's for sure. Yeah. Every wide receiver was leaving the game yesterday. All right, Patrick Mahomes now has two more weeks on that ankle. I don't think that'll be a story.
He'll be fine.
He'll be fine.
Kelsey will be fine.
God, all
whatever
of, yeah.
that hamstring issue he was.
This is why you want 2 weeks before the Super Bowl, kids. Let everybody get healthy.
But I was bugging me, Travis Kelsey. It's a game time decision. It's like he's not
yeah,
playing.
Yeah, he's not playing.
An amputated leg, sure, then I'll believe that he's not playing.
Exactly.
But I was feeling last yesterday. I know I was. You and I were talking yesterday. I was feeling bad for the Niners.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
Brock Purdy goes too. Down, and then Josh Johnson goes down. And you know, they're going like, oh, Christian McCaffrey's warming up. I'm like, what?
Somebody said, yeah, Christian McCaffrey was the guy that was going to play quarterback. Instead, they just went, Brock, just go out there and hand the ball off.
It's just a whole lot of wildcat happening now, isn't it?
This is nuts. Yesterday, somebody pointed out that Josh Johnson has been in the league 15 years and has made $8 million. That's like statistically impossible, but yet, yeah,
that's
true.
Terrible.
He's been on practice squads. He's been on a million rosters. He's just bounced around. Somehow, some way, he keeps finding a home league.
Could get Chase Daniels' agent to help him out.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Man, can you imagine being in the league that long? And I mean, in the end, like, some of it goes to your agent. A lot of it goes to taxes. A lot of it goes to people in your staff, you know, whatever people that you have, like, helping you out with training and nutrition or whatever it is you do, whatever it is you hire, mental health coach, whatever.
It's 15 years in the NFL, yet you don't have life-changing money.
He's basically broke. I mean,
really?
I mean, you're right. It's not life-changing money. It's not generational wealth. 15 years in the NFL. Like most guys, 15 years, they've accumulated nine figures, right? This
right.
guy's $8 million.
Like, we always point the finger at Chase Daniels.
Yeah.
That's the perfect career, honestly.
Exactly. Yeah.
You
know, tons of
made,
money.
He's made, what, like close to $60 million over his career? And not really, he's just, I mean, he's probably going to make an excellent coach.
Probably. Okay, look, I know this is an argument people have, and I understand, and I've had this debate forever. But this is why when we have rules that protect the quarterback and everybody goes, ugh, why don't you just put flags on them? I'd rather they have flags than deal with Josh Johnson coming into the NFC Championship game and no throw Brock Purdy after Johnson suffers a concussion. I'm sorry, but Mahomes Burrow is better than Henny and whoever is the backup at Cincinnati. I have no idea.
Gardner Minshew, come
right?
on.
What are we talking about? I mean,
I don't know. I would like a little Minshew in my Super Bowl.
I'm sorry. I was talking about yesterday's AFC Championship.
Yeah, no,
game,
you don't but you know want what
I
mean?
Minshew Henny. Like, I understand that this is a violent sport and a violent league, but now you understand why the league is protective of quarterbacks.
Here's the deal, right? I mean, what was the fourth play of the game? Third
yeah,
or fourth
oh, yeah,
play of the
exactly.
game when Brock goes down? You knew from that moment on, it's like, oh, this game's done.
Yeah, you're asking a guy who hasn't played all year to come in and win you the NFC title game. And again, because the Disney movie is always possible, that could have happened. But it wasn't. It's not likely to happen.
No, there was game managing. But as soon as he went down with the concussion and Brock Purdy came back in, if I'm the defensive coordinator, why even have anyone 10 yards back?
Yeah. Exactly.
You know he's
they
not throwing it down the
field.
He can't throw the ball. He couldn't grip the ball.
Well, that's what the Niners were saying yesterday. They said it the rest of the game. The whole game, after the game, they said, they knew we couldn't pass, and when we can't pass, we can't do anything. Once the defense knows what you're going to do, they're in an advantage situation. When you are under the threat to throw or under the threat to run, you got to keep the defense honest. When you don't have to keep the defense honest anymore, they're going to tee off. Everybody's on a hat, and bam, gone. See ya.
And they did.
And they did.
I mean, they knew that, okay, you know, the most that they can give up is a 5-yard pass. I mean, you know, to Purdy's credit, he went 4-for-4.
Yeah. At the end, they're trying to sweep, like, they're getting it to Debo Samuel, who's trying to sweep to the other way. They're doing, like, a little trickery to try to break something, and you can't. But, you know, when McCaffrey scored that touchdown, I thought, okay, wait, this actually might be running back. Because remember the Eagles, it wasn't like Jalen Hurts was slinging it all over the place.
No, he was.
Right? I mean, outside of the pass to Devontae Smith, catch, no catch, he wasn't effective throwing the ball.
No, because you sat there and you thought to yourself, like, well, okay, you know, after McCaffrey did score, I was drinking the tea and going, you know what? If the defense is good,
yeah,
that defense can keep him in it.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, the defense, if you're going out there every four plays, there's nothing you can do.
And that's, again, I know injuries are always going to happen to quarterbacks. There's nothing you can do about it. And there's no rules that are going to keep quarterbacks safe forever. But let's be honest, that game lost a lot of its luster, a lot of the thing that happened on Purdy.
It's not the matchup we were looking for.
No, because Purdy, look. Before anybody says, oh, but Brock Purdy was a backup no one heard of, and look what he did. That's why he's a special story, because Gardner Minshew couldn't win a game for the Eagles.
Yeah.
As good as that Eagles team is on defense and offensive line and Miles Sanders and Boston Scott and A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, Gardner Minshew lost both of his start. Backup quarterbacks are not supposed to win you seven straight games. Right? That's not the way it usually works. That's why when it happens, it's a unique story. It's something we go, wow, look at that. That's unique. Let's go over there and take a look. I can find exceptions to every rule, but the rule mostly is your backup is a backup for a reason. He's not the starter. They never thought at all this week about Chad Henne starting this game on Sunday.
No.
The guy had a high ankle sprain that they talked about 4 to 6 weeks takes to heal, and Chad Henne's name wasn't mentioned at all as a possible starter. They knew Mahomes would go out there. They didn't care what percentage he was. They didn't care if he was limited. A healthy Chad Henne was never, ever starting this game with a dude that had a high ankle sprain on Sunday. Like, on Saturday. So to me, that's one of the reasons why, again, the league, again, you don't have to like it. I know some of you love, you know, you bought the hardest hits tape back in the day and you love smash mouth quarterback and blowing quarterbacks up. And I get it. This is football. It's not for wimps. I understand. But now you know why. If you paid a guy $40 million a year, you'd make him go out there on one leg too. Right. And boy, Mahomes for the ages. All right, I do want to get to the officiating because it was terrible. But is it a conspiratorial? And those are two totally different things. And is it time the NFL just realizes something? And does it need somebody to wake them up? I got an analogy that I think works. Stick around for that. It's Tony D. It's Ron Culver. It's Wake Up Call. It's Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Glad you could be with us on a championship Monday. So Eagles and the Chiefs heading to Super Bowl 57 in Glendale, Arizona. So there's obviously, every time you get a national game like this where you're going to get 50, 60 million people watching, whatever the final numbers are. But, you know, these games are just huge, huge in terms of people who don't really follow sports, but they may watch, and a whole bunch of people that love football are watching, and we're all watching one game in one time. There's naturally, anytime there's going to be a controversy among the officials, there's going to be some people who are really not only outraged, but they're beyond outraged. I mean, they're conspiratorial. Conspiracy and sports go hand in hand, and it's been like that forever. And I've always said, once you lose credibility, you lose everything. That's one of the reasons why punishment for gambling is so severe with these leagues. You can't lose credibility. Once people think the games are rigged, you lose everything. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, think about the way, it's not just the ticket buying public. You lose credibility with the politicians that you need to build stadiums or whatever you may need. I mean, from advertising to whatever. Once you lose the credibility because you're not coming out and telling people that it's rigged, right? People believe it's square and it's not square. So all of your corporate sponsors, especially the gambling, are going to lose their mind. And that's why I've always avoided these things. I love people who think that officials, I mean, look how old these guys are. Right. I mean, look, do you ever see a guy who's like 25 years old officiating a game? You ever see a 30-year-old officiating a game? These guys are in their 50s. Right. They're running around with 20-year-old men and they're running around with little pot bellies and whatnot. Some of them are ripped. Don't get me wrong. Ed Hockley, what was he known for, those biceps? But some of them are in great shape. And they're older guys, of lawyers, et cetera, et cetera. It's a high paying six figure job. But we think that they're, instead of just being incompetent, there is some sort of larger Machiavellian thing. They're like a super villain with a master plan that they'll monologue on if they've captured him. I would love for the people to think that. I would love, if I come on here and I just spew mistakes, if I'm just like naming the wrong quarterback that played for teams, or forgetting who won the World Series last year, or thinking LeBron James still plays for the Cavaliers, I would love for somebody to go, he's got a master plan. His master plan is to help out this group. Like, he's doing it on purpose. So this, instead of thinking, no, he's dumb, he doesn't do his research, he's not competent to be on the air. Like, wouldn't you love that at your job? If you made a mistake, somebody goes, no, it's, you don't understand. He's playing 3D chess. He's masterminding a larger plan to destroy this or move this or to get certain people in the right places that benefit him. Instead of, yeah, Jim just screwed up on the line yesterday, man. That was terrible. He put the wrong part in the car, or whatever it is that people do for a living, right? We do that with officials all the time. We do it with umpires all the time, all the time. Instead of going, they just blew it. No, we go, no, there's a conspiracy behind this. But let's be honest here. If you're the league, this is a terrible look. Do you remember this show that used to be on TV with Gordon Ramsay called Kitchen Nightmares? Do you remember that show?
No, of course.
Remember that? It started in England, and then he moved it to the United States.
Yeah,
and
it pops up every.
It pops it up every now and then.
While they but have the, new versions of it.
If you've never heard of it, the premise of the show is this: there's a restaurant. There's an owner. The
struggling.
Owner struggling, but does it his or her way. Gordon Ramsay comes in to visit. He takes a look at the decor. It's multicolored. It's got stupid knickknacks on the wall. It doesn't have a theme. He gets the menu. He orders five or six dishes. They're all terrible. And then the owner explains how his five-day-old meat pie that he microwaves is everybody's favorite, and they come in just for that, and it tastes like dog food. And Ramsay's like, can't believe this place is still existing. And then he goes in the walk-in, and the place is dirty, and it's got like chicken thighs in dripping on fruit, right? And he says, this has got to be shut down because you're going to kill somebody in here. And then what he does is he revamps the whole thing, right? He puts it brand new equipment. He paints it. He brings in new furniture. He brings in a new menu. He trains the, right?
Sometimes brings in a new chef.
Sometimes brings in a new chef. Somebody's like, this is Mike. Mike has worked with me for 25 years. And he's going to be here running your crappy restaurant here in Hoboken.
For the next 3 months.
For the next 3 months. Over. And then you're out. So, yeah, Mike's like, yeah, not for free, Gordon. Yeah. I'm not living in this crap hole, right? So the premise of the but here's the point. Sometimes the owners are receptive. Sometimes the owners go, you know what? I'm going to admit my food's terrible, and my decor is terrible, and my thought on the menu is terrible, and everything about me is terrible. But then there's always the episode where the owner fights back. The owner wishes that they had the knickknacks back, or they wish that they didn't change the color, and the menu's stupid, and well, why can't we have the meat pie anymore?
Yeah, the five-day-old meat pie.
Right, why can't we have the five-day-old meat pie that we microwaved? That's
what
awesome.
What we're known for.
So the reason I bring that up is because I think this is what the NFL needs. Now, instead of the struggling restaurant, you've got an incredibly successful multi-billion dollar business. But doesn't it take a Gordon Ramsay to go to them and say, there's something wrong with your officials? Either you see it or you don't see it. But owners, we've got a problem. So here's what needs to happen. And a fresh set of eyes comes in. First of all, is there a chip in this football or not?
Right.
Find out if there's a chip in the football. Because if there's a chip in the football, let's start utilizing some technology to get that chip in the football to help us spot the football. All right, let's do that. Second thing that we have to do is we've got to incorporate some sort of sky camera, some sort of ability of a third guy in the booth to override what's on the field to say, hey, I'm seeing it in a different angle. We got to cut this out. The third thing, we're just going to have to admit some of these guys, and I'm getting older too, so please, please, please hear me out. We're going to have some younger people in there that can keep up with these players. Let's go back to the Cincinnati-Baltimore game. Did you know not one official could keep up with Sam Hubbard?
Right.
When he was running 99 yards for the touchdown, the other way, 98 yards. Not one official could keep could keep up with him. Now, we have a great angle when we see the games. We're seeing the angle, the television angle, which I think is one of the most perfect angles to watch football. But you know how, like, that on-field camera? You can hardly see anything. There are people blocking your vision. And if you're running down the field trying to follow a play, and there are athletic people running past you blocking your view, you're not going to see a block in the back. You can't. Every official is down at the goal line, and none of them have the capability of running with Sam Hubbard pace for pace down the field. It's 100 yards. And NBA officials have to be in shape. NBA officials have to be in shape. You can't lug up and down a court in officiating the NBA. But what's that, 94 feet? Right, up and down? But you still have to be in shape. NFL officials look like they just got out of an office all day and haven't been to the gym in a while, and they're trying to run 99 yards sometimes to keep up with a play. Sometimes their angles are off. They can't see. They can't do things. If you're the league, you need a Gordon Ramsay to come in and go, guys, this isn't working. Not on your biggest stage. Not when the conversation is going to be about officials. Not when pool reporters have to go to officials all the time to say, why were you, what were you thinking? What were you seeing? Please explain to the American public, because everybody is now thinking that the five of you are rigging these games, or the seven of you are rigging these games for some sort of purpose.
And you know what I think the problem is? Is because these guys aren't full-time.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, NBA refs are full-time.
Yeah, and they get paid a lot of money. They play like $400,000 a year. Yeah. Tim Donaghy talked about when he got fired, yeah, he lost the golden goose. He's talked about it in his documentary. He goes, I lost everything. I lost a high six-figure salary, traveling around the country, staying in nice hotels, first-class travel. I lost it all. $500,000 a year for what? For more money?
Yeah.
Like, these officials, it's a six-figure job, don't get me wrong, but they're all doing something else during the week.
Because I'll look at the NFL referees, and I guess, you know, I'll equate it to English Premier League, because that's something on a large field, or, you know, any type of soccer. Something on a large field, that guy always looks in shape. You don't have anyone that's a little overweight.
Right, right.
You know, running around. And we're not asking, you know, like you said, you know, no one can keep up with, why the name just escaped me?
Sam Hubbard?
Sam Hubbard. I'm not asking you to keep up with Sam Hubbard.
No, he's one of the fastest linemen in the league. He ran a great 40.
There's a reason why he's a world-class athlete. But, yeah, you should be at least in the vicinity.
You should be somewhere down the sideline where you can see what if something's going down while he's trying to get to the end zone.
And I think if you made your referees full-time, you know, during that offseason when they all go back to their real jobs, they, you know, say, hey, I got to keep putting food on the table instead of, you know, concentrating on my weekend job.
Right.
You know, then you make them full time. It's like, all right, well, these guys now can get into shape.
Yeah,
and it might be enticing for younger people, because right now, why would a young person want to be an NFL referee? They still need a regular job.
So in this particular game, we'll get into it a little bit more. There were a couple of circumstances in the Chiefs Bengals game that were troubling, and we're going to get to them, including the dead play where the Chiefs got a redo, the intentional grounding by Joe Burrow. And whether or not, if you know the circumstance, should personal foul be thrown, Patrick Mahomes falls to the ground out of bounds. We'll talk about all three coming up when we come back. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Again on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Philip on Twitter. The way the NFC game started, it felt like I was watching one of those Thursday night Amazon Prime games. Yeah, I know. Brock Purdy out. But you know, Pete Futek had a tweet yesterday from collegefootballnews.com. He said in the very beginning of the tweet that it was unfair. And I agreed with it, but I kind of went, I think you're kind of right, though. He said, look, with Kevin Burkhardt and Greg Olsen, it didn't feel like a big game. We're just not used to them being the number one team.
Yeah.
Right? That's not the fault of them. But he's, you know, no, yeah, you're right.
I totally, you know, see what he's saying.
You know what? I mean, you get accustomed to certain broadcast teams and Buck and Aikman were the Fox crew forever and ever. And when they would come on TV, you felt like, oh my God, this is gigantic. Al Michaels is the same way. I mean, he just has Romo and Nance. The difference between the level of that game in terms of just the way it was presented compared to the way Fox presented, it really was different. It was different. You know, I was criticizing Romo pretty much through the game yesterday. I like Romo. Don't get me wrong, but it's like somebody said, we're paying
it's
you a lot
to be
of money.
Too much.
Talk as much as possible, even if you have nothing to say.
Yeah.
You know, and
I mean, he's moved on though. Cause remember, 2 years ago? It was just a lot of noises.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like that.
And I pointed out on Twitter, you don't have to say Jim every time you want to make a point. You're talking to the audience. You're not talking to him. We're not eavesdropping on a private conversation you're having with Jim Nance. Like, you can, every now and then you can, if he asks you a question, you can say, well, Jim, blah, 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 blah. But you don't have to go, Jim, I think it's going to be a third down run. You can just say, I think it's going to be, you're talking to us. You're broadcasting to us, right? And it's, you know, so he was kind of all over the place. I think he does need to slow down. If I was advising him, I would tell him to slow down and breathe. You're not losing anything if you just catch your breath for a second. I pointed out on Twitter, there was one moment where Cincinnati called a timeout. And Romo was like, Cincinnati probably took a timeout here. They did take a timeout here. Just if you slow down, you would have noticed that they called timeout. Then you can say, Cincinnati's called a timeout here. This is what I think they're going to do. This is why I think they called a timeout. But when you're going 100 miles an hour and your brain is going 100 miles an hour, you can't pause, just let the moment breathe a second, and then analyze it. He's so hyper, he's trying to be, you know, that kind of Romo Domus thing? He's trying to be ahead of what's, and he just gets, fumbling at the mouth. All right, so let's get to the officials. Do I think there's a conspiracy to put Kansas City in the Super Bowl? No, I don't. I don't think the NFL really cares who's in the Super Bowl. They make their money on the Super Bowl. Everybody watches it. There's no reason to mess around with that. Do I think that there could be rogue officials that are not being dictated by the NFL to call things that, for their own personal gain? That's always a possibility. Let me tell you something. If you give me a situation in sports and you say to me, I know for a fact that there is hanky-panky going on with the officiating, I'm more likely to believe a rogue agent than a directive from the league. The directive from the league is too dangerous and involves too many people. But a rogue agent, sure. A guy who's got money on the game or his friend's got money on the game. There's always the possibility of that. I'm never, ever going to think that people who officiate games, umpire games or whatever, that none of them are all, every one of them is squeaky clean. Some of them probably have vested interests in games. They probably have rooting interest in games. But when people talk conspiracy, they're not talking about that. They're not talking about the one guy that's like, really need the Chiefs to cover here. Holy cow, my mortgage is on it. I'm talking about the league saying, all right, we're all in agreement, right? Kansas City's going to Super Bowl 57, and you guys got that covered in Philadelphia, right? Eagles, we got that good, right? We want to make sure Andy Reid and the Kelce brothers, that's the best story. You know what it's all about. Like, I don't believe that. It's too dangerous. And too many people would come out and say, hey, by the way, you know this is rigged from the start. But again, it doesn't mean you can't find avenues to be angry at officials and want to know why. Wait a minute, what's up? This is not right. This just feels weird. The games are called in different ways. One thing you do in the NBA, for example, is you look at how many fouls were called, the discrepancy on the foul line, right? If you've got a game that is going one way and you look at the stat sheet, you're like, oh my God, they went to the free throw line 22 times. We went 6. Then you can make a point like, wait a minute, this isn't right. This isn't fair. That's what happened in the Sacramento Kings LA Lakers game years and years and years ago. But in this situation, people want to know a couple of things. One, why did the Kansas City Chiefs get a replayed third down after they were stopped? So there was a third down. The Chiefs had the ball. They threw an incomplete pass. Then they were coming off the field to punt. Then the offensive was coming back out on the field. And that's when Romo was like, they're going for it on fourth down. But Nance went, no, wait, I think there's something else going on. But they didn't know what was going on. And then they got word that they were replaying the third down. And at that time, again, nobody knew why they were replaying the third down. And if you saw the sidelines of Zach Taylor, he was losing his mind, and rightfully so. Now, I, who have no dog in this fight, I was feeling for Zach Taylor. Like, I felt myself getting angry because I was watching how angry Zach Taylor was on the sideline. And I was saying, wait, what are we doing? Wait, what are we doing? We're replaying this? Jason LaConfora pointed out on Twitter, and it makes a good point. You let the play happen. Somebody could have got really hurt. We always, that's not a dead play. The play went through fruition all the way through to the end. What are we doing here? So pool reporters get to ask the officials questions. The officials don't have press conferences, but if you're a pro football writer, they establish a reporter that can talk to the officials. It's after every single game. So in this case, the pool reporter went down to interview Ron Torbert, who was the official. And this is what Torbert said, and I'm going to read the whole paragraph, is what he said to explain what led to the replayed third down. On the previous play, there was an incomplete pass. We spotted the ball, but the line judge came in and re-spotted the ball because the spot was off. We reset the play clock, but the game clock started running. It should not have started running because there was an incomplete pass on the previous play. The field judge noticed that the game clock was running. He was coming in to shut the play down so that we could get the clock fixed, but nobody heard him, and the play was run. After the play was over, he came in, and we discussed that he was trying to shut the play down before the ball had been snapped. So we reset the game clock back to where it was before the snap and replayed the third down. Then the question was asked, what are the normal protocols when a play can't get stopped in time and the play does get off, especially if it appears it did not affect the play, which that was the case. If we're trying to shut down the play and we couldn't, we would shut it down and go back and replay the down. So basically, Torbert's got all of his talking points in order here. He explains it, in a way that kind of makes a little bit of sense. Right, the game clock's running. It's not supposed to be running. That's precious seconds in a close game. One of the judges noticed that. He's trying to shut the play down. Nobody hears the whistle. Nobody sees him moving. The play goes on. Everybody plays it out. Everybody thinks that the play. Now, the reason I said nobody backed off on the play is because neither one of the teams, like, was looking around going, well, what do we do now? Like, everybody thought, we failed on third down. It's now fourth down. We're punting. The Bengals were sending their punting return team out, and the Chiefs were sending their punt unit out. So nobody on the field was like, wait, I heard a whistle. What's happening? What do you mean? What are you doing? Nobody heard this whistle. So it seems pretty fair enough that if the line judge says, oh, my God, look at that. We got to fix that. Let's stop the play. But you're supposed to stop the play. But then, again, he gets his talking points in a row because when asked, hey, then what's the rule? Like, what are you guys supposed to do? And Torbert basically says, exactly what we did. So if you're asking me what the protocol is, I'm going to tell you we followed protocol to the letter, which is just gather, say that didn't exist, and we're replaying the down. Was it fair? Okay, no, it wasn't fair. And it wasn't fair because, again, I think if you're the officials and you want to stop a play dead, you stop a play dead. You have some way of getting every official with a whistle in their mouth to blow the whistle. Even if Arrowhead is loud, you've got to find a way to get everybody blowing that whistle so you can stop a play. You can stop a play after the ball's been hiked. You can stop a play. Happens all the time, right? Offsides, whatever, where they blow it. Stop. We're done. We're going to redo that. But they let the play go all the way to the end to a conclusion and then said, that's okay. We got more to get to when we continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.